Immense. For those of you in the room, there are documents on the second table. Please take one of each. The documents will also be projected in the Adobe Connect room, which we have open at this time. And we will be having participation from the room here in Cartagena, and we will also be having participation from those who are in the Adobe chat room. So we will be switching between the two various points of participation. So please be patient when we do that. I shall then turn over the mic to Philip Shepherd, who is the chair of the OSC.
So, everybody, good morning. It's Philip Shepherd, chairing the OSC. There are not so many in the room, so we may as well perhaps just introduce ourselves also for the purpose of the recording. So, on my right, we have...
Olga Cavalli, I'm non-com appointee to the GNSO.
Thank you. And on my left...
Michael Young.
And then in front of me...
Stefan Van Gelder, Registrar Rep.
David Taylor, GNSO Council.
Robert Wick Norman, GNSO Council.
Guillermo Guillermo Drake.
Chris Chaplow, Vice Chair of BC.
John Berard, BC.
Thank you very much. And we have our roving photographer in the room as well.
So smile.
Got the glasses on, shall we? Right. So our agenda this morning is three items. The first is section 5 from the operating manual for the council, ongoing issues to do with the DOI, SOI, that is declaration of interest and statement of interest. Second is a review of and comments on a paper we circulated some time back to the steering committee, which is the global outreach program recommendations. I invite Olga's here because perhaps you can introduce that item when we get to it. And on item 3, really just to flag up to this group, there have been discussions about one of the procedures that was passed, adopted, and is active now on council to do with absentee voting and abstentions. And now that that particular item is in operation, I think there have been a few issues in terms of its practicality. So we just want to review that and see if there's any additional work we can do to make it more functional. So going back to item 1, I hope you've all got yourself a copy of the paper that was on the front desk here or has been sent round. And this is the latest version of the Statement of Interest, Section 5. Now, the version that you would have received by email yesterday and that is in the room today is a hot-off-the-press draft that's been done at the level of council, adapting the version that we had reviewed on the steering committee that came in turn from the relevant working group. The essence of this is that the concept of the declaration of interest, the DOI, as a separate entity to the SOI has been deleted, and I think there's general agreement that that concept is sound and can be done. And we are the paper attempts to work together to make the system functional with the same objectives, but perhaps a little bit simpler in terms of the way that it's done. And the change that's on this latest version have been some items essentially correcting suggesting changes to the original version of the SOI, where there were some phrases, I think, that have caused some issue. And I'm delighted that Bill is in the room, because, Bill, I believe you have been instrumental in some of the changes in this latest paper. And Bill is nodding. And perhaps, Bill, if you can have a microphone, what I might ask you to do is talk us through the key comments and why you made those changes, and then we'll just take a discussion of each of those changes as we get them. In terms of outcome for this, we'll need to decide as a committee what we want to do. We can either sort of note that this is some suggested changes and consult a bit wider on it for a few days at this level, or if we feel we could ask Gray's group on the GCOT to give an opinion as well before it goes through. But I think particularly with this issue to do with statements of interest, which is inherently tied up with conflicts of interest, and given that council has potential for conflicts of interest, I think we do need to get it right. So if we need to spend a bit more time on this in terms of approving final procedures, I think it's probably worth doing so. So, Bill, take us through the changes that you've made on this paper, which I think starts in 5.1.
Thank you, Philip. Actually, the way the printout is, it doesn't show whose comments these are. So I'm going to look at my computer screen instead. Okay, well, there were several issues that I think came up. And again, for those who are not on the council call and not reading the council list, I do apologize that we didn't catch these concerns sooner. The timing didn't play right, and that unfortunately meant that we had a motion to get rid of the DOI stuff, which we fully support. Nevertheless, there were lingering concerns that needed to be addressed that we couldn't address in time, and so accordingly people voted against that motion. But we will fix that on the next time around. And now we've got language, I think, that will do that.
Bill?
Yes?
We're hearing from the Adobe Connect that it's hard to hear you.
Oh,
if you
I'm
could
sorry.
Speak up a little
I
bit.
I haven't had enough
Thanks
coffee
so much.
Yet. Okay. So what I was simply saying is that there were concerns about the ways in which the statements of interest terminology might be construed that led some of us to want to get this fixed before we passed a motion adopting 5.0, and so that's why there was a vote against the DOI deletion. It was not because people did not want to get rid of the DOI, and we will do that the next time. Anyway, so, well, there are some lingering questions that are unresolved here that I put in yellow to ask, solicit more conversation amongst the small group of us who are working on this, but I'll just go past those. I'll stick to the points that I actually made changes to, which Wolf and Stefan and Mary also were working with me on in this little group. One was to delete the concept of direct and indirect interests, which, because the whole notion of indirect interests is a fairly malleable one and easy to misconstrue and can turn into a sort of political football that doesn't necessarily serve much purpose. There was a question about whether some of the remaining language in 5.1 definitions, such as perceived to affect the relevant party's judgment, should also be addressed, but one can argue both ways on that. That are left there, as did the others.
Bill, stop there, because what I'd like to do is take each of these in turn and
okay,
just see where we've got
sure.
a discussion. I mean, I suspect that the reason that direct and indirect was there originally was just to indicate that we were looking for statements of interest in its widest possible way. But you're concerned there that it can go too wide or just too vague or what? I mean, I think deleting direct and indirect and to me doesn't necessarily change much.
And to the extent that that's true, that should make the deletion easy to do. the term is simply one that lends itself to...
One can't extend that logic too far, I guess.
But the term is one that could, in some circumstances, be used to construe that somebody's actions or motivations are driven by some kind of ephemeral interpretive conception of what an indirect interest might be in something. It's such a broad and loose term that it just doesn't really... It opens us up to conflicts over little points that I think there's really no reason to do that.
Right. Any comments on that? All right. So I'm assuming silence is construed as consent for this purposes of this group. Yeah. Okay, Bill, thanks. Carry on. Next one.
That's never a very good operating procedure, but okay. So moving on to other things that we did, there's some editorial changes in here, cleanups that Mary and Julie and others put. Move past those.
Yeah.
Moving to the end of 5.2.3 exceptions, I raised in a footnote or a comment the point that Avery had raised about whether or not we need to have some clear language with regard to the exemption for full-time the exemption for full-time staff means that contractors who do not have an exclusive contract with ICANN must fill out an SOI. She notes that this is not stated explicitly and thinks it should be. I don't know if that's something people want to take on board, but it's a comment Harvey made to us. Well, and she's here, so she can explain more if she wishes to, whether we want to try to address that.
Okay, so the moment, the original language is excluding staff members, and then is this new language that's underlined?
Oh, okay. Yeah, the point was the whole discussion that we had gone through on that was that at first there was no mention of any difference for staff members. And so basically the question becomes, do staff have to do an SOI DOI, assuming that there still is a DOI? Have you already gotten rid of it? Because I have other issues on getting rid of it. Okay, I don't want to. But that's a different issue. And then we went through a lot of discussion, and basically there was feedback from staff and legal that says for full-time staff, they don't need an SOI because they are full-time staff and their whole world is ICANN and nothing but ICANN, and so there's no need for it. And basically the GCOT view that came out, and I'm vice chair on it, so I'm trying to express it, was that, well, if there is a statement from staff legal staff, whoever, saying that for all full-time employees and those under exclusive contract to ICANN don't need an SOI because this is their SOI, their only interest is ICANN. But that leaves a category uncovered, which is those contractors who are not exclusive contractors. So therefore the assumption would be is that they still need to do SOI, DOI if it exists. That is not stated explicitly, and I think that it's not good to leave that in a gray area. It either should be stated explicitly. Well, it should be stated explicitly. I think that's the assumption that came out of the GCOT, is that they could very well have. I know that I've had customers and clients that sometimes maybe needed to know about each other. And so that would be, you know, if you had ICANN as a client and you had ITU as a client, it might be worth having to state that.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. What doesn't make sense to me is why it says GNSO group or staff member, because this is solely a staff member category, isn't it? Is that just phrasing?
Actually, this is Julie Headland, and I should note that was a change. The redlined text that is an addition to the section was a suggested addition that Mary Wong had made.
She was not here to speak for her sins, I note, so... Okay. Not sure.
But that although I think she's coming. Although she may be going to PPSC. Yeah, okay.
Okay. For me, what Avery's saying makes sense, that clearly there could be this grey area, and all we're doing is talking about declarations of, say, statements of interest, so that seems fine. Any comment on that? Does anybody have a problem with that suggested change? No? Wolf.
Sorry, well, I have to understand clearly, because it was not that clear in which direction we are going in this respect. Does it mean... So for me, we have, let me say, different options. At the time being, it stated those who have an exclusive contract with ICANN are representing the interest, and so far they don't need any SOI or DOI. So the other option would be to because and the reason why it could be excluded or exempted from is because ICANN should state a global, but that's missing, I'm sorry, posting a global statement of interest, So I understand that ICANN is going to post a so-called global SOI for those who have an exclusive contract. So you mean they should also post an exclusive and global SOI for those who don't have an exclusive contract?
No. I mean that those individuals themselves have to do an SOI like everybody else. And as they have to do an individual SOI that they won't be, since they wouldn't be covered by the global ICANN SOI for all exclusive contract / employees, because they're not exclusive contract or employees, they're multiple things, that they would have to file their own just like any of us.
Seven, yeah.
Yeah, this is Stefan Bengelder. I agree with what Avery's proposing. I'm just looking at this language again, thinking that it may be slightly vague, the edits that we've added at the end, staff members' individual circumstances warrant otherwise. I mean, that's obviously leaving it up to the individual staff member to decide if those circumstances warrant otherwise or don't. But do we feel that that's slightly vague and needs tightening up, or is that sufficient?
Well, I guess it's phrased like that because it's sort of catch-all. I mean, the only circumstances we've described, though, yet so far have been those who are not full-time employees or with an exclusive contract. We could state that explicitly, couldn't we? That would be clearer. So we then have an exemption. We then have an exception to the exemption stating in the negative, particularly those groups who aren't there, which ties it up very neatly, doesn't it? Okay, good change. Thanks. Anything on that? Yes, Ulrich. Wolf.
But with regards to Mary's suggestion, so the. Who would have a question?
Yes. My thing at the moment is that we're deleting Mary's point because it simply doesn't belong here, even if she's got a valid point to make about the issue
yes.
Subsequently.
You are not. Somebody, stay there.
Okay. Mary, we're on... we're on the bit on the Mary. We're on the bit of the operation procedure on the SOI. The section about staff exemptions, and you had inserted in the council drafting an exception about GNSO group, and our feeling was, having reread the paragraph, that it probably doesn't fit here because we're only talking about staff. I wanted to make sure you were happy about us taking that out.
I assume you can hear me if I speak into this thing. And I think the intent here was to capture the fact that it may be on one occasion or another in the future that a staff member would have, either by background or involvement in something or other, something that needs to be captured in a specific SOI relevant to that particular group that they're working with or supporting. That was the idea. And to the extent that the language doesn't capture that, I think you could change that. So I think there's two things. Whether that notion, that concept is something that's acceptable for a specific staff member in one specific circumstance, depending on whatever the group is. And we don't know at this point what the GNSO group is.
Are you talking about an exception to
the
full-time or exclusive contract staff? That we may...
It could include that concept, but because that particular concept, I think Avery had brought up that point, I wasn't sure what kind of language, whether you want broader language or more specific language.
All right.
But it would include that.
On the exception to the exemption, we've changed the language to make it clear that the exception is going to only refer to not full-time staff, not an exclusive contract. So everybody's captured by that. So we're taking out the vaguer, broader wording, individual circumstances warrant otherwise, to make that clear in terms of everybody who's not previously described. So your point would now only be relevant to a subset of full-time or contract or exclusive contracted staff. And I'm not quite sure if that's now what you want.
I think since the point was brought up, and I apologize for walking in late and for repeating things that you may have talked about already, then it is the prerogative of this group as the primary, you know, shepherds and drafters to, like I said, decide on two things. One, if that point is something that should be captured since it's something that's been mentioned, and secondly, to the extent that it is, what would be the appropriate language that would not be too broad or too vague. So I'm comfortable with the group making that decision, but I did want that point to be raised and discussed.
Okay.
If that helps.
That's clear. No, thank you. And I love the term shepherds. And
that was deliberate, Philip.
So back to Bill, if we've done on that point.
All right, where am I then? Okay, so then moving along, 5.33 content. This is where there is perhaps a change that people might want to discuss and may have different views. Under, where is it, 6, please identify any other relevant arrangements, interests, or benefits.
On my version, there's a 4 first. There's a deletion of 5.334.
Stefan, I'm sorry. Stefan, or me. Stefan, you should talk about this one. This is yours.
Yeah. We just, simple edit, really. We just felt that when you're negotiating a transaction or a contract, you're in a period that's obviously confidential and you can't be expected to disclose that. So we just felt that should come out.
Any comment on that? Commercial secrecy exemption? Okay, let's move on. Bill, then 6.
So, on 6. Do you have any type of, and then it had the distinction, commercial, non-commercial interest in ICANN GNSO policy development, and I suggested removing this distinction between commercial and non-commercial and replacing it with the term material. And I did that also then in the next sentence where it says, if the answer is yes, please describe the interest, and so on. Now, why? The notion, I understand the desire to have parity across different actors involved and say, well, if there's commercial interest, then there must be non-commercial interest that we can identify. The problem is exactly how that might be construed. Because it's if one is viewing non-commercial interests in terms of personal rent-seeking, aggrandizement, benefit, material benefit of some sort, then what exactly does that consist of? And I asked on the list, on the council list, to Chuck what exactly is intended here by those who have been involved in this. And he replied to me that he gave an example. He said somebody may not derive a direct financial benefit from participation in GNSO work, but they might receive recognition that promotes their reputation and stature, and this may elevate them in groups that appreciate such efforts. Now, first of all, the fact is that that's not actually, there's not a written definition of what non-commercial interest would be that gives it that particular interpretation, but if people are going to be inclined to associate that interpretation with it, then I have a problem, because there's a number of kind of woolly conceptual leaps involved there. The notion, and I could go through why I think that's so, but the point, why don't I put that aside for the moment, because it might be obvious to people what I'm suggesting. What I suggested instead then was to simply replace it with the term material interest, and I looked in the Internal Revenue Service of the United States. They have a definition of a material interest, which is a material interest is an important interest and is generally but not always financial in nature. However, in legal sense, the interest needs to be substantial or of consequence. It seems to me that this is reasonably straightforward and not open to a great deal of abuse. Somebody's got a concrete, identifiable, and unquestionable kind of benefit that they would derive from participation in something, often normally of a financial nature. If, on the other hand, we want to go into reputation-type conceptions, well, those, first of all, would apply to everybody, not just non-commercial. Secondly, the reality is, of course, that, for example, Chuck pointed out, well, academics, for example, would achieve some glory and benefit from being able to vote on OSC and work prioritization and so on. The reality is actually that that's not true. In academia, normally participation in activities like this would be deeply frowned upon as something that's taking you away from real work, which is intellectual masturbation, and so on. I mean, the reality is, generally speaking, the efforts of people to define what this non-commercial interest might be of a sort of glory kind of nature really don't make a lot of sense. They don't map with the real world of why non-commercial actors get involved in these processes, and they seem to want to assume that when people say they do this because, for example, they care about the Internet, that that's not really true and there must be some vested material benefit that they're deriving. But the effort to define exactly what that is deeply problematic, and I just think opening up that can of worms and making this a point of debate is just not going to advance anything. And frankly, I found it kind of offensive. So to me, the notion of material interest is much more straightforward. If it's good enough for the Internal Revenue Service, it's good enough for me.
Okay. I mean, I think, again, your suggested amendment is driving in the same direction as the original. To the extent that it's borrowing language from a source where clearly it's been tested, we don't have to try to reinvent the wheel. Gives me a certain feeling of comfort. I think your point about academia is probably right, because if an academic is any source of publication is about ICANN, I think they're probably in serious trouble. But Vanda, you've got a point to make.
Yeah, well, in the board, we had some debates about facing these new GTLDs, there is a lot of agreements for future material interest. And inside the board, we need to state that.
A future material interest.
A future material. Okay. You have an agreement, and there is no payment now because there is no business yet, but you have a future interest in that. And so inside the board, we decide that we should state this kind of conflict of interest, and maybe we could think about the same thing here, because there is a lot of people involved with the future new GTLDs, and nowadays there is no conflict, but you know, next year or in 2 years or whatever is the agreement, they will be, and they are working in that direction, so should be completely stated in the. That's what we decide over there, just to make you know.
Okay, Vanda, I think that's an interesting point, and it touches, in fact, on the earlier one of four that we discussed about, which was the deletion of maybe actively negotiating a transaction or contract. Stefan.
Thanks, Philip. I'm just asking myself, following on from Wanda's point, why single that out? If we ask people to disclose any interest, why single a specific category? Shouldn't we be looking at a wider footprint and making sure that we catch any interest that might be of interest, sorry for the pun, rather than just singling out new GTLDs? For obvious reasons, nowadays I get the feeling that we're so focused on new GTLDs, everything we do needs to have new GTLDs in them, but this should be wider.
I do understand that, but facing the new GTLD is the reason that there is agreements for non-profit relationship that should not be, declared or stated here. But there is some of them, there is for the future, will be something as a payment or participation, or because you are doing a free task now. So you have no, have no commitment now to say, I'm with such or such interest. But in 2 days from now, and I'm working, for instance, I'm working for, promote these things. So you don't know that I'm working for. So everything that I'm trying to driven for this side, it's related to that agreement that's non-profit, and I have no obligation to state. It's a difficult point, but inside we discuss about the California law, and there is a lot of things, so John Jeffrey makes some obligation to us to declare these things. So I'm raising the point because it could be some of the, especially individuals, could be in that situation. Thank you.
Okay, I've got Michael first, and then Avery.
I just wanted to actually agree with what Stefan was saying earlier, and that is, when I look at this language and I think about this being an international space, and it's very subjective in some people's minds what's material and what's not material. This is about accountability and transparency when you make these declarations. So why not drop that simply to any type of interest? Add another statement that says, along the lines, please describe your argument for whether or not this interest is material or immaterial. Allow people to self-declare why they think their interest is material or immaterial. And then people reading that have the opportunity to judge that from their own point of view, from their own norms and cultures and so forth.
Okay, Avery.
I think I'm actually coming in a space between the two. I think that making the general statement for the material and for that, but I do think, in honoring that, that having something that lists some of the possible interests that one might have, whether it's a footnote, whether it's, these interests may include A, B, C, D, that, then because people might not, coming into this note, well, what do you mean an interest, and might not have a scope of what things it might include. So I definitely agree we don't want to have an exclusive list. We don't want to have an exhaustive list. But I think that having a set of categories, I tend to be a maximalist about indicating interest. That's why you'll find out later that I strongly support a DOI. And so being a maximalist about declaring interests, I think, we've had this discussion elsewhere about we don't want somebody to do the work pro bono because they'll be doing the work to try to get themselves a contract and so on. So that kind of secondary interest when you're doing something for free or for is quite real. So I would suggest finding a road in the middle that says material, but then whether it's a footnote or a something that lists a variety of possible things to consider in making yourself declaration.
Okay.
Thank you.
In terms of where this would fit, fortunately, the brilliant drafters of the original gave us a definition section, so it would logically fit there. My inclination at the moment is to go with the material interest wording in 5336, under definitions to use indeed the U.S. Internal Revenue Service definition and add a phrase qualifying that in terms of that it would include future interest, and we can look at that in due course. If everybody else is happy with that, I've got Mary.
And I would support that approach as well, Philip, because it does provide guidance to people, and some of these members or potential members may be relatively new to ICANN. So something that's broader than that would make it very difficult for them to fill out an SOI and put added burdens on the staff to vet them. And in that context, I would think that to the extent someone is not clear what is or is not a material interest or fills something in that turns out to either be or not be, then coming down later on to 5.4, there are methods and mechanisms to resolve that. So I think that that's an excellent suggestion, and we should just keep material.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are we agreed on that then? I'm seeing no further comment. Bill? Next issue. Next point, which looks like 5.4.
Apologies. Somebody handed me their computer to read something unrelated. So I'm a little... yes. Aubrey. Okay, so material interest is fine, and we get rid of this effort to differentiate what commercial and non-commercial is. That's, I think, quite good. Under 5.4.2, accuracy, I had raised the question here. I was inclined to delete the distinction. It has been deleted. It has been deleted, so that I don't need to read that. That was the director indirect.
Oh, this is a repeat of the director indirect.
Yes,
isn't
that's
it?
All right.
Okay,
that's
we discussed that. That's fine.
Yes,
so we
Mary
happy
cleaned
that
up for me.
Yeah.
So moving along, I think I'm done with my. Those are my main points.
I believe you are. Other comments on the draft as amended in front of us? Seeing none, we're probably done with this item. What I'd suggest we do, I think we've worked through this successfully at this level. My inclination would be, with your permission, I will work now with Julie to do a version capturing all of our erudite discussions here, and then we will consult on that version at the OSC level, and I will invite Ray, as a chair of the GCOT, to participate in those discussions. So that's on process, and Bill.
Philip, I'm sorry. I raised a question. Nobody picked up on it. I'll just circle back and make sure. In the at the beginning, in 5.1 definitions, do we want to leave or be perceived to affect in there? My only question was, once we get into these kinds of questions of perception or possible perception, one can see ways in which that turns into a political football or a strategic tool that somebody could use to question somebody's motivations, actions, et cetera. And it's kind of an expansive term. I find it makes me a little bit uncomfortable. I was just wondering if everybody else feels strongly that it needs to be kept, then I'll shut up, but I just wanted to raise the point.
Okay, well, my instinct coming from the public relations side of the world is that perception is everything, so I would probably want to keep it, but happy to get comment. I saw Avery and then Stefan.
I have a comment on a different topic.
Different point,
so
okay.
Stefan's talking
so
about
on
that
this
topic.
Comments on this topic, Stefan.
No, I support what Bill says. I think, although I understand what you're saying, Philip, about perception being everything, it's also very hard to measure. And if you have to start wondering how other people may perceive what your conflicts of interests are, I think there comes a point where we have to expect that people, you know, people are adults, they'll say what declarations or statements of interest they have to say, and if those aren't true to the facts, then at some point they'll probably be caught out and someone will say something. But I think if you're asking people to measure the perception that others... I mean, I have no idea what perception I have on David Taylor, for example, sitting next to me. But
I can describe his body language to you, if that helps.
I'd rather you didn't, actually. But so I would support what Bill's saying there.
Okay. Any other comment on this point? I think probably my own instinct is to go along with that, because indeed it's perhaps placing too much on the individual in terms of that assessment. to be honest. Okay, I think then that's the change we'll make, and we'll consult on it anyway. Good. Thank you. Yes. So we're agreeing to delete, but all this will go for consultation. And there was another point, Avery.
Yeah. I guess I hadn't been aware of it, but it was pointed out to me that by 5.0 saying statement of interest and not statement and disclosure of interest, we had effectively killed disclosures of interest. And so I guess I want to speak out against doing... Is this on? Yes. I want to speak out against doing that at this time. And I'm basically offering, first of all, two positions on it. One, while the council itself may be covered by a statement of interest because they're dealing in general with all of the issues at the managerial level, the disclosure of interest was actually meant at two different audiences. One of them was the council, and whether a statement of interest, a disclosure of interest being we are talking about topic X today, and do you have any special interest, should indeed be covered by their statement of interest. On the other hand, in working groups where we're taking up a succession of different topics at every meeting and a new topic comes up that may require not something quite so permanent as a statement of interest because it isn't your job, it isn't a this, but, oh, yeah, I would think of applying for that at some time in the future, that notion of the statement that is immediately applicable. Now, does this need to be a written thing? Does it need to have all these conditions attached to it? You know, no, I think that's probably not necessary. But to get rid of the whole notion, I think, has some problems. The other thing, if we do get rid of it, since it was explicitly requested in the BGC's report, BCG, they actually did talk about these things. That's where the notion first came from. I think we would have to have an explanation of why we decided not to do something that was recommended.
I mean, for me, I think there seemed to be wide support for getting rid of the distinction because it was felt to be unnecessarily complex, and my instinct is to go along with that. I think the point that you're already talking to is probably something that is intended to be captured under 5.3.1, which is timeliness. And it may be that now we're getting rid of DOI, what we should be doing is clarifying what we mean in timeliness and suggesting that perhaps indeed there may be, you know, perhaps the guideline there, which is updated at least annually, is no longer the right guideline, given that we are now conflating these two concepts. So what I think in terms of time also for this meeting might be a thing to do, Avery, if you are inclined to agree with my suggestion, would be to ask you to provide wording on 5.3.1, which would capture the point you're trying to make. And I have Stefan.
Yeah, thanks, Philip. I really want to speak to this because this is part of the... Well, this is the main reason that you have received a new draft from a group from the GNSO Council that's come together to work on this. Perhaps I should start by admitting that I think some people kind of agreed to these recommendations without reading them thoroughly. I'm trying to be as diplomatic as I can about saying this. And then came to having to put them into practice and having to send a written DOI for every single meeting. And suddenly we found ourselves, I mean, just like yourselves, we are volunteers, we're generally overwhelmed with work, and if we're adding to the complexities of our everyday procedures, then we soon find ourselves in a situation where we just can't manage and we can't cope. So we looked at this and we just found them to be in reality unworkable. So I would strongly recommend that we do not go back to including any mention of the DOIs and any requirement to have a written DOI. And the basic logic behind that as well goes back to the point I was making earlier on about
having to have some element of trust that people will behave as adults. I mean, if you are asking people at every single meeting, imagine we come into this meeting and we have to submit a written statement before this meeting just saying, you know, we have interests here, there, and we're just getting into situations where it's so complex that you know, we're not going to make any headway. So I would suggest that we do keep things to some extent simple. I think we've covered most of what conflicts of interest could arise with the text that we have in front of us, and that we move forwards with that. Thanks.
Ray, is your point on this point? Yeah, okay. You need to talk close to those microphones.
Okay, so can everybody hear me? Okay, so I think there are two issues here with DOI. One is, does it need to exist at all? And then two, how does it exist in written form? So, you know, the GCOT was pretty clear on this one in that, at least if you want to look at it in the revised fashion, that's certainly not a written DOI. That is not what the GCOT is trying to put into the procedures, if you will. What is trying to be covered here is the concept of, you know, there's a lot of verbal discussions that go on. These are open venues. ICANN has open venues, public microphones, meetings of whatnot. And it's really the spirit of this is only to encourage participants to acknowledge when they feel appropriate, acknowledge that they may to declare an interest at a point in time when they may become involved in some matter, some policy matter, where they feel it appropriate to acknowledge that they have an interest. That's the declaration of interest, more of a verbal approach, whereas a statement of interest is what's meant to be a written document and then per the language updated at least once a year. That's the idea of it.
Okay, Bill.
Thank you. I'm inclined to agree with Stefan, although I fully understand Avery's concern about wanting to be clear about these kinds of things. I mean, I just can't help thinking, as a general matter, that people understand that registrars have these interests in intellectual property, people have those interests. And so, you know, to have to state that each time, in most cases, it doesn't seem entirely obvious to me. But my bigger point is, beyond complexity was the question of redundancy. When we looked at the original language, you know, the statement of purpose, statement of interest was sort of on, you know, the council's engagement with everything, and then the DOI was on the council's engagement with a particular issue, which one would think is a part of everything. There wasn't a very clear basis for distinction. It just seemed like a redundant formulation. So if one were to try to preserve a DOI concept, apropos Avery, I would at least want it to make clear that if you've already filed an SOI, you don't need to do DOI. Maybe other parties that don't have SOIs could self-declare what their interest might be in a particular issue, but asking people who've got a standing SOI that says, here's where I'm coming from, asking them to re-up each time does make it kind of a mechanistic thing. Okay, Avery doesn't agree, but this is my feeling is that's...
Okay, well, let's have a cue, and we have Mary next. Huh? No, Mary's referring to Avery.
Yeah, I think it's being mischaracterized. It's not asking people to re-up to everything every time they say it. It certainly goes along that if you've already made an SOI, it doesn't need to be said again. But if you're in the middle of a discussion, either in a working group or at a microphone, and you are about to make a comment, for example, and I truly support that there should be grants of $100,000 to everybody with you know, a family member that has blonde hair, that you self-disclose, by the way, I have a family member with blonde hair. I guess I'm being absurd about it. But basically, this is not something that would be in your SOI. This is something that is specifically topical, specifically issued, related. In other words, in the VI group, I am a registrar, and I plan to become a registry. Now, your SOI does not have to say that. But if that's truly what you're planning, you should say so. You shouldn't be arguing from a general principle without stating that these are my intentions. You know, or as I say, in our new applicant support, I intend to apply for financial help for the needy. If that's the case, you should say so, as opposed to just arguing for that. Nothing in your SOI asks you, by the way, when new GTLDs come along, do you plan to apply for financial aid? So there's, in each group you look at, there could be specific issues that you are making declarative statements about from a perceptibly neutral stance when you might not be.
Okay, I'm going to have a 30-second guillotine on comments now, please. And I have Mary in the queue first.
In 30 seconds. So I'm wondering if I can tie together your first comment about timeliness, what Ray said about the intention to not have lots and lots of documentation, and Avery's concern, because I do get the BGC point, and I actually went back and read the report, and I think you're right on that. Would it help if we actually had something of a requirement that before every meeting, the chair of that group reminded participants that whether we use material change or something, that they make a verbal declaration of interest at that point?
I mean, that's the case on council at the moment, isn't it?
It's the practice, so I'm wondering if it would assuage the concern.
You could extend that to other groups.
And if you had some statement in writing under your timeliness provision addressing something like that, would that be helpful?
I quite like that, because that prompts people without making anything too burdensome. I'm getting nods around the room. Okay, don't make comments if you agree with that. Just nodding is good. Good. I think we may have settled that point. No?
Can I get in the queue, Colin?
Yes.
I just wanted to say, I mean, the level of precision of contextual stuff that you're giving here was not reflected in what the language that we dealt with, and that's part of the issue. What you're looking for was not clear in the minds of people when they looked at the DOI language at all. It seemed rather more loose and repetitive to us, and that was part of the problem. We do have the fact that in the council, as opposed to this group, there was a very strong desire to get rid of DOI. So if we're now going to turn around and say, no, we're not doing that, I think we do have to be quite precise in what we're going to send back, or else they're going to turn around and say, what the hell happened? We're going to go back and forth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody with anything new to say on this? No. Then I will take on board those comments and attempt to reflect those in the summary we put out for consultation. And I think that now we'll move on down our agenda. Those eagle-eyed will notice we have 2 minutes left of our allotted time. We do have a coffee break that we can eat a little bit into. I think given where we are on time, I'm going to delete item 3, which was raising an issue that had been, I think, that had come out of council in terms of the operation of the absentee voting and abstentions and proxies. I mean, I've heard competing comments on that, some people saying, actually, it's okay, we can do it, it's all right, and others saying it's a bit complicated. My feeling is that we just need to get some more information. If there's a fix to make, then we're happy to work on a fix. But I will perhaps put a message out to council about that so we can solicit that input. So let's just go to item 2. Olga, introduce it in 30 seconds and perhaps point out any issues that you want to get some discussion on.
Sure. Thank you very much, Philip. For those of you who have not been following this outreach document, just a brief introduction. The working team that I had the pleasure to chair with participants, as Michael Young, Debbie, who else is in the room, and some others, and with the valuable help of Julie Chuck, also was in the team, Tony Harris, Rafik, and others. One of the two tasks we were committed to do was building an outreach document about outreach for GNSO. So this is the document that you have in your hands. We built a sub-working team led by Debbie, and then we started this task in Brussels in a meeting we had face-to-face where we outlined the most important issues that we wanted to address in our document, and then we worked in biweekly meetings, and we submitted first draft of the document to the OSC, if I'm not mistaken, by October. And then it has been revised 3 times, addressing comments from Steve and from Ron, and I don't recall if I'm forgetting someone. And this would be the updated version with it trying to include all the comments and all the observations that we had. The document talks about a strategy that for outreach for the GNSO that should be or could be addressed by what we call the OTF, Outreach Task Force, that it's a structure very... It's a broad structure, but we intended to be light with a very small steering committee, but with the inclusion of people who is interested in ICANN, who has been part of the ICANN process, who is part of the ICANN process, or just interested in. And the main purpose that we would like to achieve with this task force is to, because we believe there is value in diversity, to bring people from regions where there is not a lot of representation, to enhance the participation in ICANN meetings, in every meeting, so bring more locals, new people to the process, younger people to the process, people who has not been involved, get interested in ICANN. Me, as a teacher of a university, I'm surprised that in most universities where we teach about internet, nobody knows what ICANN is, so I realized that in my daily life. So, as I told you, the document has been 3 times revised with the comment included and changes suggested included. I don't know if you want to to go into details in the document. It's quite self-explanatory and simple, so... Let me know what you want to do.
Olga, thank you. I think, in the interest of time, we're not going to conclude on this item. So I think we will need to continue discussion by email on this on the group anyway. But just in terms of taking value of us being together here, Steve, have you had a chance to look at those changes and do they go in the direction that you were hoping? And can we have a microphone for Steve? Yeah.
Thank you. I apologize that I haven't gone through it in detail, but I did see on one thing that I wanted to comment favorably on at the top of page 5, which is this recognition that outreach to different groups is going to require different approaches. And in particular, the question I had raised is that I think that outreach to contracted parties is quite different than outreach to the non-contracted parties. The outreach to non-contracted parties is generally, I would think, to try to get more participation from more groups and higher levels of participation and understanding. Whereas for contracted parties, I think it's a business decision as to whether someone wants to be a ICANN accredited registrar or to apply to run a registry. And I also don't exactly see... it seems they have such an obvious self-interest in participation in ICANN that it wouldn't be necessary for ICANN to encourage that participation, particularly, or to spend resources on that. But I do appreciate this list here and that there are the recognition that they're different, and I will look through the rest of it and try to get any more specific comments.
Okay.
But thank you for that.
Thank you. I've got Wolf Ulrich, and then Michael, and then Chris.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, I raised a question regards to the OTF, because I think with the last version of this document, which I appreciate very much, it became clearer. So what might be in your mind, you know, how to organize that, and that was where I was thinking about: is it going in the right direction? You know, it seems to be a little bit that there will be a committee or a task force with approximately 50 participants you have in mind, maybe more, maybe less, I don't know, a task force, I understand, and also a steering committee, and I wonder how this is going to work really effectively in the future. So I don't have a solution for that, but I would like to understand why, for example, On the one hand, we have an ALEC. Yeah, you mentioned, okay, there might be regions. There is no ALEC, but ALEC is also taking efforts, well, to enlarge their at-large organization. And so how does it fit together? So I would like to avoid that there is going to be established a new large organization and bypassing or duplicating the efforts at large or others are doing.
Okay. Yes, I'll respond.
Thank you. Thank you for both questions. I think they are very good. And Steve, about outreaching to contracted parties, and I will speak from my own region. We have 6 registrars in Latin America, which is a very big region with a lot of internet development. And in Argentina has been, for example, a little country in the development of several businesses in the internet in the whole region, especially in e-commerce. Many ISPs have no idea that they could become ICANN registrar, and that could be a good opportunity for them to have a new business or to broaden their business perspective. So I think that outreach in some regions of the world, maybe this is not the same in Europe and United States, and I understand that because it's a very mature and developed market. But in some regions of the world, and I'm speaking on behalf of Latin America, where internet is really going to grow a lot and the market will develop a lot because we are installing a lot of fiber optics in the interior of the countries and we are enhancing wireless networks. I think that's a business opportunity for contracted actors as well. So I think outreach could benefit them. And I understand your point that it's a business decision and it could be a good business decision for some of them. So we see value in that idea. And Wolf, we don't want to duplicate efforts. We know that ALAC is facing that towards end users. The fact is this is for GNSO. And we understand that having... We want a lot of people, but not so much engaged in a advisor committee or supporting organization. We want them to do outreach in their own regions and in their own countries, in their own universities. My experience in the MAC, in the IGF, was interesting because we are like 50 people. We are engaged through a mailing list. We meet 2 or 3 times a year. We may meet remotely. You may not travel to Geneva, but the group is multi-stakeholder from all over the world. So it's people from government, people from industry, should I finish?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So it's not duplicating. It's having people coordinated by a very small steering committee doing outreach and enhancing the ICANN meetings, enhancing the information that the universities have, enhancing some local events and seminars with information about ICANN and more specifically about GNSO. Stop.
Thanks, Olga. We just before Mike, I'll take you. We've got a comment on Adobe Connect, which I'll ask Judy to read.
Thank you, Philip. This is Julie. Rafiq and Domic is concurring with Olga and also emphasizing that there is a need for more registrars in Africa.
Rafiq, thank you for that. Michael.
Just add what Olga has started on commercial interests and contracted parties. There are symbiotic relationships with people who are involved in business, for-profit companies. The community that they operate in has to be whole and healthy. And there are a lot of aligned interests in that. So, for example, Affilius, as a good example that I can state, has put a lot of effort, a lot of funding into education on IDN technologies and security issues, which I think benefit the community at large and aren't necessarily directly related to a profit and loss perspective. It's just to keep the community healthy and keep the whole enterprise healthy, which benefits a lot of people. So I think it's worth noting.
Thank you, Michael. I've got Chris next, and then Bill, then Jamie, and then I had Tony and Steve.
Thank you, Philip. Just briefly, Chris, from the business constituency. Just to be aware that we're doing outreach activities ourselves with limited budgets, obviously, and the sort of things that we often do is printing fact sheets for the BC, and this is the Spanish one that we've done for Cartagena. So to be aware that that sort of activity is going on, and perhaps we would see part of the what's this new acronym? OTC? OTF, thanks. As a facilitator for work down in the constituencies, and to dovetail in with the toolkit that we were talking about yesterday. Thank you.
Okay, Chris, thanks. Bill.
Thank you. I'm strongly supportive of the concept that we have here, and as somebody who thinks it's desperately important for ICANN in particular to reach out to and engage more people from developing countries, I think that this is an important vehicle. We had what I thought was a really sad kind of discussion in Nairobi in the public participation group that Jean-Jacques chaired, where and a lot of the people here in this room were there, where, you know, it was the usual suspects sitting around talking to each other about how do we get more developing country people involved, and there were three Africans in the room, you know, and then there were like 30 of the global nomads who float around to these meetings talking to each other. And it just seems to be over and over, ICANN fails systematically to leverage the fact that it moves these meetings around the world and so on. But the question then becomes, what's the most effective way of doing this? I certainly think that it's something where there should be closer coordination between Secretariat and some contact point in the volunteer community. But I don't know, Olga, that we need a big group of 50 people, and I certainly wouldn't base it on the MAG. The MAG is a fairly dysfunctional organization that has all kinds of political problems, et cetera, and I don't think it's a good model. I'm also a little bit concerned, frankly, when you talk about leveraging various things that you and I and Avri and others are involved in, like the summer schools. I mean, I think we have to be somewhat clearer here. Okay, you know, I don't think we want to turn all of these different activities into evangelical efforts to draw people into the ICANN church. I think we have to maintain the autonomy of those kinds of initiatives. And so there's a whole bunch of ideas that I could put forward about how we might do outreach more effectively, but I don't need to say them here. But my point is, I like the general concept, but I would try to make it less bureaucratic and ambitious sounding so that people don't have the instinctive kind of reaction that Wolf just gave of, oh, my God, what are you proposing? This sounds, you know, enormous and unfocused. Thanks.
Okay, Bill, thanks. I'd just like to take names remaining who would like to make a comment at all on this. I've got Jamie, I've got Tony, I've got Steve, I've got Vanda. Am I missing anybody else? Last chance to talk because we're going to close the meeting after that list. Thank you.
Well, this is Jamie, and I would like to support what Bill just said. But also I would like to make a counterpoint to what Olga said, because I think this kind of outreach is much more in the ICANN as an organization interest than in the ISPs, for instance, from Brazil. And I said that already. We have more than 2,000 little and bigger ISPs in Brazil, and they do not see the DNS business as a business. And I don't think it is because they lack the expertise of Europeans or Americans, but I think that there are other opportunities in the internet, and ICANN is not about internet. ICANN is about DNS. As a market, I say, and there is a lot of other business opportunities in the internet, and it's a very at least in Brazil, and I don't know, I'm not familiar with Argentina, but at least in Brazil is a very active market in the internet business. So, and I still have my doubts if there is a strong market here, but what I see, it's a shame for all of us, is that this multi-stakeholder model that is something new and it is in its infancy. It didn't already catch it up. Is something that all the developing countries should engage. Because unless there are, there is not this engagement, this very model is a fact that at its heart, I think, and it will become ill and this is something also in the, it's more in the ICANN interest than on the developing countries. It's in both interests, but I think we should do this work.
Thank you. Tony.
Yes, I think actually everything we can do about outreach is good. I would like to just briefly comment on something we did 2 weeks ago. ECOMLAC, the Latin American Federation of the Internet and Electronic Commerce. Last year, we did two events on the future of the Internet. One was in Buenos Aires. The other one was in Sao Paulo. And we heavily featured the program on UTLDs with support from ICANN, who were present. This year, we did the same event. We ran it in cooperation with the Chilean government in Santiago on the 24th of November. There were 700 people there. It was telecast all over the country, and we had, I don't know, dozens and dozens of questions online about new TLDs. It was a huge surprise for everybody. And so I think that highlights the fact that that not many people are aware of what ICANN does, or even if ICANN exists, and what is the purpose of its mission and activities. And I think that combining presentations with important events such as this one, which was organized by the government, can be very effective in doing outreach and reach an awful lot of people very quickly. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve.
Yes, I think the last few speakers have given some excellent examples of outreach that's going on now, and I think that's very important to continue. I really think we just have to, as we approach this, we should think about two questions. One is it ICANN's job to promote business opportunities for private businesses anywhere? Is it ICANN's job to do business development for other people? That's the first question. And the second question is, if it is part of our job, is that part of the GNSO's job, or is that something that ICANN should be doing through its public participation committee or in some other way? The GNSO has is overloaded with issues and topics and problems. So I don't suggest that I know the answers to these questions, but I hope that those questions will be considered.
Thank you, Steve. I think it's a very key question, actually. Vanda.
Yeah. Being the one that started the fellowship program in ICANN, and answer some of Steve's question, I believe, yes, ICANN should improve their sponsors, because ICANN need more, you know, the growing of sponsorship with the growing of its organization. So it's an ICANN task. If a GNSO task is another issue. But I do believe that could be a very a better inter-organization among many constituencies and advisory committees here to really make outreach work. I have been done a lot of inside together with ICANN staff promoting many things in Brazil, but it's still inside the fellowship program a very clear division that the fellowship program supports fundamentally government, poor governments, and you know, people, independent persons. So why not? I talk about that in some occasions. We need to start to bring to this group more professionals, more professional groups that are related to the. And when we did that some years ago, we brought from Arabian area a lot of lawyer business related to that, some ISPs that became registrars, and there is business there. And there is opportunities that people don't know really. So my suggestion is have all those, and Jean is always one of them, engage with the others to improve the outreach, including the business area. For the others, I do believe there is no need to do that. But for business, there is really a lack of outreach in the ICANN. Thank you.
Yes. Olga, indeed, it would be helpful if you sum up what you've heard today, and then we also need to address the topic in terms of process. My sense is that we're not done yet on this document. There's been some good input that perhaps you already want to take on board and make changes, and we know there's some other comments that people still want to submit. So please sum up, and then I'll try and go from there in terms of what we do on process and timelines.
Very briefly, I would like to respond. I think there were very good comments and suggestions. For example, the materials developed by business constituency. Nobody knows the business constituency in many parts of Latin America. So that material would be great if we, some of us, that it's we are part of, or we could be part of this outreach task force, could handle this material to the people who is interested. Why 50 people, Bill? Maybe not the structure of the MAC, but why 50? It's five continents. I would like five or six people be engaged in Latin America and doing this. One per country, one per two or three countries. It's not that much people. If we really want to be global, we cannot handle that with two or three people. Maybe a small steering committee. Maybe it's not the MAC structure. What I thought about the MAC was having a very light structure, like working in a list and meeting once in a while. Jamie, I'm not saying that DNS is the business. Could be a side business for some ISPs. That's something that many ISPs maybe not so aware of. That's the point. Maybe broaden their perspective for the business. And I totally agree with you that there are many opportunities in the Internet and Latin America, and Brazil especially is very active. And Steve, I don't think that we have to develop businesses, but we should bring the information to, as Banda said, smaller, medium enterprises, younger professionals, to know about what's happening here, and maybe they find a business opportunity. They should be the ones to find it, but maybe we handle them the information. And I like Vanda's comment. We have to only bring governments or independent or young people. Maybe we bring a small and medium enterprise from Argentina, Brazil, Ecuador, who knows. So that's the perspective I would like to bring. And some of these activities are very much related with Chile, so this is why we thought it could be interesting to develop this group, this OTF. But as a suggestion, we would revise the document. We will send you a new version after the meeting, like maybe in 2 weeks, and we can work further on it. And thank you very much for the comments. Very constructive.
Let me make a proposal on timelines then. So if we will wait until we see a new comment from Vanda. Suggested deadline, say 15 days for that. Anybody with comments should get that to Vanda. For further comments, should get that to Vanda within that time frame, ideally in a week or so. And then perhaps we will take the time, bearing in mind we've got holidays at the end of year, etc. I may well then set something like a mid-January timeline for people to respond to your next version.
Okay, perfect.
Good. So at that point, I think we will end this meeting, but discussions, of course, will continue. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you everyone. This meeting is adjourned, and we'll close out the Adobe Connect. Thank you.